A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
The final word today is in association with The Athletic. Head to theathletic.co.uk/theredmentv to get a 50% discount off your annual subscription and get some of the best, if not the best, Liverpool writing on the planet right now, today. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Final Word show. Liverpool beat Manchester City by 3-1 to establish an 8-point lead at the top of the Premier League. And the best thing about it, it's not even an 8-point lead over Manchester City because they're in fourth, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to talk about the Premier League table a little bit later on and how wonderful all that is. But Steve Hoare joins me in the Chris Pajak role. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
You feeling good?
I'm feeling fantastic.
Amazing. John Reid returns, as does Bailey Shaw as well, gents. It's like I said. It's like a youthful, revitalised lineup. It's, you know,
I'm not young, so that
doesn't. But more, you're younger than Pajak, so
that's true.
I'm playing the James. I'm playing the James Milner role today, like, you know, so you can play more of like the established. You can be the Oxlade-Chamberlain.
I'll take that.
You're a utility man now.
Yeah,
play everywhere on the pitch whenever you need it.
Starts just like
Oxlade-Chamberlain without the money or Little Mix.
Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott over there, definitely.
You're deaf or Harvey Elliott.
I'm not making a case. No, absolutely no point.
In fact, honestly, if Harvey Elliott shaved his head, you could have a case to have like a Dr. Evil mini-me style situation.
He's tall. I swear he's only like 5'9".
He's really short, but he dresses like you.
Exactly.
Great. Yeah. And I have nowhere near his footballing capabilities or money.
So. That's absolutely fine. Okay. Anyway, it was a splendid afternoon of football at Anfield. Steve Hoare, how are you feeling the build-up? Because everyone I spoke to was absolutely breaking it.
No, I'll be honest, I wasn't. I didn't think we'd lose. That was the main thing. I thought, worst case out of here, is that we'd come away with 6 points, a 6-point lead over them.
Yeah.
Obviously, with that 5-point lead at the top of the table. So I was all right with it, to be honest. That the history is instructive. It always has been. It always will be. They come to Anfield and they don't win. Well, to be honest, no one does. Touch wood, but you know, in, obviously, 2017, since someone beats in the league at Anfield, so you've got to trust this team that they're not going to lose the game. The flip side is you're playing against a fantastic footy team because City are brilliant, and you know if they turn up and doing that, play 10 out of 10, they could beat you 3-0 because they're that good. But I never ever felt like we were going to get beat. It was more, I'll be honest, it was the first 5 minutes of the game where I thought, oh, Jesus Christ, this. I felt nervous then.
Yeah.
Once it kicked off, I was like, bloody hell, these are good.
Yeah.
Because they were all over us.
Remember these.
Yeah, bloody hell, they haven't done this for a while, have they? But now, going the build up to the game, I was quietly confident that we wouldn't get beat. And I thought, you know, I wouldn't have, if you'd have offered me a draw, I wouldn't have took it.
I don't think
we're going to lose.
I don't think enough, John, was made of the fact that City could have won this game. Like everyone was, it was. They cried it in without all the injury stuff, which I'll pick up in a moment. But all the narrative was about Liverpool being on top of Man City, really struggling, and again they've not got this record. Liverpool are so good at home, blah blah blah. The only thing that made me, it didn't actually make me nervous. It added to the excitement. Was that they were perfectly capable of winning that game. You can actually see it in the balance of the XG and stuff, that they did more than enough, you know, on other days. They created enough chances, got the ball in the right areas to cause more problems. But I was just more excited than nervous for this game.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone else is taking the same thing, but I've sort of taken the tact this year of I don't really care what City do. Like, they're none of my business, and if I don't think about them, I can't get into the state I was in like last April, where I was basically having a mental breakdown every weekend. So for me, it was more a case of just like, it's a turning point in the season. We'd leave this, for me, I didn't think a draw would happen. I thought we'd leave this 9 points clear, or we leave this with a 3-point gap, and yeah, we know what we're about then, we know where we're going. But, you know, we were talking about it just before we started upstairs, you know, like, 60 still had, like, you know, if, as you're saying, what with the injuries, 60 still had like £100 million worth of players in the stands who didn't even pick for the bench. Like, yeah. Mendy was there, Zinchenko was there, you know, and then, you know, surprise, surprise, you know, David Silva's on the bench, Rodri starts.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to, for all the kind of cry arse and that's happened since, over everything around like the results, around the decisions and stuff, and all the stuff that went into it, it is kind of hard to feel bad for them when they've got that debt.
I completely agree on that. And that's the thing, Billy, about this whole, oh, poor old woe is Manchester City. Okay, in regards to the goalkeeper, fine. Mm. Because Bravo's fucking rubbish. He's rubbish.
We played seven games at the start of the season with a guy we'd signed 10 days before.
Exactly. So we were a piece of silverware. And you know, and went unbeaten in the league with a goalkeeper who, by all accounts, wasn't good enough to play it for West Ham.
Yeah,
he definitely is. By the way, because I've seen West Ham sub goalie.
He's even worse.
He's so bad.
He looks like a lad who's just because he looks a bit handy. Like he plays in the local pub, and he turns up at a pub for the first time on a Saturday night, and he gives a Billy big bollocks about how he's fucking brilliant, and you chuck him in because he looks the part and he's absolutely shocking, and you wouldn't tell him to his face because he doesn't look like he'd kick your face in. Like, but like I get it on the Bravo thing. I mean, bear in mind, this is a lad who, you know, who's a Barcelona.
£30 million they paid for him.
Yeah.
You mean, so that's the thing. They miss Laporte, no question about, no doubt about that. But I didn't go to the match. I watched it on the TV yesterday. I had commitments. But
I'm
suggesting that I didn't want to do those things. I had to do them. To miss the match, but then I just got in for it. But like, if your team falls apart because you lose one centre back, that's kind of on you. You know, yeah, I mean, yeah, listen, Liverpool would be a worse team if Virgil van Dijk got injured, and they have lost Laporte, and that's bad.
Yeah.
But I don't think our defence would be as bad as theirs is now. If we had Matip and Gomez, or Matip and Lovren, or Gomez and Lovren. Yeah. I think we'd be worse, no question, but we wouldn't be that bad.
Exactly. Well, this is the thing. Bailey, Chris made this point because he was on Five Live ahead of it, and the Man City fans were doing this, like, "Oh, we're missing Laporte, we're missing Matip," and they go, "Yeah, but well, he's not. Well, we're talking about a first team centre half, so you're missing a first team. You might be missing your best centre half. So we caveat it with that. We're missing Zinchenko. We're missing Nathaniel Clyne. If you want to talk about players who were down the pecking order that are unavailable, they still put Angelino out there. They still got
Cancelo's on the bench.
On the bench. Mendy doesn't get in the squad. But again, the centre back thing, they had Otamendi on the bench. Otamendi was their second choice centre half, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, for sure.
And they've chosen to put a DM at centre half instead of.
It's the worst thing is if you're going to construct a team and spend loads of money, that's fine. But then one thing you can't do is be the biggest hypocrite in football, construct the most expensive team ever assembled, and then complain that you get a few injuries.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, you look at their bench, they had cover at fullback, cover at centre back. What do they have?
Mahrez.
Jesus obviously comes on. Phil Foden was on the bench. Like, their bench, even like I was like putting them side by side, and I was like, you could still make a case that they've got a better bench than us. And it's like, there's one thing you can't do is complain when you've spent a load of money. You know, and you haven't got cover.
They're a massive. I've noticed about City fans recently and City the club. They're just massive cry asses.
They just love a win
for no reason. Like, do you think the world out to get them or whatever? Mm. City are brilliant. They are absolutely brilliant. They've got the best manager I think who's ever been. Mm. They've got one of the best teams that's ever been. But for some reason, they just love
a cry
ass.
You know what it is? Me and Chris were talking about this, John. I think because inevitably we all live in our own football bubbles. And it's the same reason why there's Liverpool fans who think Jordan Henderson and Adam Lallana are a shit when the boss. And it's because I think Man City have got this notion of you've only got your understanding of football. And if you've grown up understanding football a certain way, then you do. You've got your best, you rank your best players to your worst players. They look at it and a little bit of it is them being told this by the manager and drinking the Kool-Aid or whatever as well. But they're bought into this notion that somehow they're threadbare because by the standards that they've set for themselves, they probably look a bit threadbare, but they lack the understanding to take a step back and look across the league and go, it's like complaining that the CD player in your Ferrari doesn't work. That's the thing that fucking gets to me.
The biggest testament is they had the audacity to complain against Norwich. They had three guys out against Norwich when Norwich had nine men unchanged in that game.
Yeah.
And it's like, sometimes you have to just put your head down and say, is it really working for you this season? Because with Anfield, they just haven't figured it out yet. You said it at the start of the show, they just don't know how to win at Anfield. And Wenger said it himself, I don't know if you saw him on BeIN Sports talking about Anfield, and he was saying, like, we construct massive stadiums nowadays for the capacity, but Anfield's the only stadium left that has soul, where you can go and take a corner and shake hands with a fan and say, you're my brother. And it's like, I think that's why every single player slash manager that comes here gives so much respect to Anfield. And it's like, if you want to push on and be, you know, that European champion like City, they've clearly got a threshold that they're trying to break into.
Yeah.
Beating us at Anfield is one of those things that I just think mentally they're not out of, and they're looking for every excuse they can, and it just falls on refs
and
or
to
injuries.
Be fair, all clubs have that, don't they? We've got that at Old Trafford, haven't we, to some extent as well.
The weird thing with City, I think, is that they haven't got characters, capital C characters. Like, they've got lads who, like, you know, who seem like, you know, on the pitch, like Aguero looks like, you know, he'll get in the refs here, and Fernandinho is a bit of a dirty bastard, but, like, they haven't got anybody in the team who you can look at. Like, so when you say, like, Laporte seems like he's at least got a bit of bar him, and you'd imagine he probably gave him a good interview. Sterling as well. But then, like, there's nothing for them to pin anything on. So, like so many of their players for me are just identical footballers, and they're all brilliant. Don't get me wrong, they all play brilliant football. But you look at them and just think, like, I've got no idea, like, who you are or what you do. And, like, and it's still the lads you look to in that team, I think, are still the lads who've been there since 2011.
They're aspirational characters, small C, in so much as they're really talented footballers.
Mm.
So there's nothing, it's like, why more people like Batman than Superman? Because you can't aspire to be Superman, but you can aspire to be Batman, which sounds weird, because there's something about Liverpool that feels self-made. It feels like if you work hard enough, if you get fit enough and you worked hard enough, you could somehow be these little, and you can't, because like Andy Robbo probably be the example everyone would hold up. He's miles better than anyone could ever dream. He's the best left back in the world.
Yeah.
But you get the sense from him, Bailey, that, like, you know, he's loving it. There's something that's just that's more, I don't know, real about him.
But it's just that team thing where you look at the two contrasts between City and Liverpool. You see Liverpool FC TV, they put out videos of, you know, Robbo and Milner, like, rating biscuits and stuff like that, or doing a hip hop quiz. Because it builds character, it gets you to know the man behind the player.
I mean, look, that's not to say that, look, that's PR, not personality.
It is, but that's what bridges the gap between you as a fan watching the players and trying to identify with these players. You know, seeing Trent and his mural and stuff like that. Yeah. But whereas with City, obviously, you see them with their Amazon documentary, and it's like, this is how we try to be the best football team, and it's like it is like that the Drago Rocky thing.
The Pep Guardiola, great. You know, they're with all the computer science and all this kind of stuff, and they're big flashy lights because it's the 80s.
Yeah, and we're out in, like, the middle of nowhere
inside, chasing climbing up, chasing chickens up frozen mountains.
No one's found any tweets from Aguero 12 years ago saying that he'd be great to have a job. Like, yeah, for our, that's the difference.
The thing is, like, going back to the original point, though, like, that's what strikes me about Guardiola. I think Guardiola's a phenomenal manager. I really like him. And if he got the Liverpool job, I'd be bought into Guardiola all day long. I would be. I actually think he would have fitted our psyche and mentality as it was 4 years ago perfectly. Like, this notion that, because we're all, and outsiders will know this, the entitlement of being a Liverpool fan.
Mm.
We have been entitled, we still are. We have that sense that we're the best and we feel like we should be the best. And we get a bit upset when, for some reason, we're not. But we've had that for years. His reaction to stuff, it is that thing of, like, he can't. He's just playing with the parameters that are in front of him. So, that's fair play to some extent, but you're right, the feeling I get from him when people don't like it or try to knock it or it doesn't go his way, and you get the sense of a bit like him, and I think he fits their mentality perfectly of, like,
thin-skinned.
This is meant to go for us. Do you not realise who I am? Do you not know who we are?
For a very successful team and a very big manager and a big personality, they are very thick-skinned. Like, it's not, you can ask him a question at a press conference and you visibly see him pissed off. You mention anything about City, on social media, and all of a sudden it's World War III. Or, you know, someone dares criticise them, and it's like, oh, well, you know, without him or without them. They need to learn how to be a big team before they get that respect, I think, because...
The amount of Man City fans to this day who believe that the Copperberg bus incident was Liverpool fans turning up solely to attack their coach and not having the scope of sight to see that we turned up to greet Liverpool's coach and Man City's happened to go past at the same time. If the City coach hadn't gone past, no one would have tracked it down. No, you know, if it come in a different route, nobody would have waited for the City coach. Everyone would have just been with the Liverpool coach, because we've seen that happen. So that happened the next year. It's fucking weird.
The interesting thing for me is that I see a lot of similarities in how Guardiola is acting now, which is when Mourinho started acting when he got the United job, or the latter change stages in his Chelsea job, where, you know, he came from Porto, he'd won it there, constructed a phenomenal side with Chelsea, went to Madrid and won some stuff there, and... because you constantly are winning things across the globe, you do develop a sense of entitlement. The same way with Guardiola did it with Barca, Bayern and now City, to the point where if the wheels do start falling off, you're just pointing fingers because you're like, look at my history, look at how good I've done. And you are getting a sense now where Mourinho just ends up attacking the press and basically treats them as an enemy. Where you could, I don't know how obviously the season's going to pan out for Manchester City, but... it could go down the road where Guardiola looks like that sort of character, where he could be, he will not let his name be dragged through the mud.
Well, we're only, you know, remember his first season, John, and we will talk about the match in a minute. There's nothing wrong with Liverpool. It's far more interesting to talk about things being wrong at other football clubs. Yeah. Tasty, isn't it? but, you know, how agitated and irritable he was in his first season at City when it wasn't quite going right. And he had this order of, I'm going to come in, I'm going to be doing this, I've got to bring this brand of football. And it wasn't working for him on the pitch. And people started to poke fun at him. That's where like the fraudiola stuff and all that come from. And look, they'll just win every game between now and the end of the season, and we're gonna have a hell of a ride, of course. But you can see it, as Bailey's saying, you could quite easily see they've got their really tough run of fixtures now. You know, they've only played what is it two of the top six teams? I think it was mentioned on Match of Day plus obviously now Leicester, and we've played them all. They're now entering into this really tough period. If they drop a couple of points here and there. How he handles it and how the press and fans around it react to that could be fascinating to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something he's used to doing. I mean, I think the weird thing about our league, you know, and maybe this is a sense of entitlement over the Prem, is that it's so hard to keep doing it, you know, to keep doing that year on year. And that's maybe one reason why we can all admire Ferguson and people like Wenger for doing it back to back and stuff. But, like, you know, he's not used to this. He's used to being a Barca. And even if they didn't win the league, you know, like, For a large time when he was at Barca, if he didn't win the league, it's because they lost to Madrid in a Clasico. And you know, he basically didn't lose at Bayern, did he? You know, he won the league every year he was there. So he's used to just having it that the big games are when we play Napoli in the Champions League. That's our big game.
And let's be fair, he's used to, at least in the Barcelona situation, probably less so Bayern Munich. But if you're losing, you're still like the model winners in the league, aren't you? Because Barcelona are the lesser of two evils when it comes to them and Real Madrid as well. It must be a weird situation again for him to come into this one. He probably thinks that, because look at the history of City. It should be a great story. Everyone should love them because, like, I turned on the telly last night when I got in, and they had the documentary about them going down to the third division and all that. And it's mad, you know, it's not that far removed. It's in the last 20 years, you know, they got relegated, a double relegation, you know. Everyone should be more bought into it, and he's probably bought into that. What a great story! What, you know, the fans, he probably loves the fans and he loves all this and that. But yeah, I always equate it to, we've all been there. If you've played your champ manager or your footy manager game to death, so you go back and you start one more game, and you know all the wonder kids, you know how to play the game, and you go in it and you end up like five seasons in, you've got all the best players, and you just click and continue. You're just going through the process of watching you win everything without having to get involved. And that's why I think people struggle to truly buy into Man City, because you're meant to win all the time. Anyway, come on, mate, let's stop.
Yeah, that's fair.
Let's stop. I'm sure there'll be more on them from a very gleeful Ben Kelly on Around the League this week. Let's talk about the match. Gino and Hendo. That's what they should be called from now on, Gino or Hendy. They got the nod over Oxlade-Chamberlain today, who was more than capable of starting this game as well. There was a little bit, I guess that was one of the things, when the team came out, you go, okay, I think one or two might have been I had a couple of tweets of people saying why isn't Ox starting, etc., etc. Well, we now know because Genie and Hendo were absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, I would have played Oxlade-Chamberlain. I said there's much building up, and I think I posted on Twitter as well. I'd have left one out for Ox just because I felt like we were going to need a goal from midfield or that the edge of the box. I mean, come to it in a minute, our DM box out of four us, but I thought that type of goal might be one that Oxlade-Chamberlain would get the chance to get, because a City do give you that space at times.
Yeah.
It was, again, Firmino just took advantage this time, but those two were just unbelievable. I mean, Henderson got taken off after 60. I know he's been ill, hasn't he? Yeah. So maybe that's probably something to do with it. They ran their bollocks off. Yeah. But that almost pays them a disservice as well, because they're not just running about. They're not just headless chickens. They're clever in how they do it. They were keeping the ball well. I mean, Gini Wijnaldum, when Gini Wijnaldum backs into someone, it should be illegal, actually, because they just can't get around him. He just stands there with his arms out and goes, I'll stand here all day until I'll pass his mate or you'll foul me. Yeah. That's all that's happening here. You're not having this ball.
And even again, Jose Enrique could do that. It's the amount of times that you think he's in trouble.
And he's not. He's in complete control.
He weaves around two men and he emerges into open space, and then he'll play a simple pass. Or actually what happened a lot on Sunday, a ridiculous raking ball across the pitch or whatever.
In big games against City, sometimes I think our midfield has let us down at times, and that's probably the difference, especially away from home. But in this, even probably in the home game last year, actually, where I thought we were quite poor, it was not. We dominated that midfield just then. That it wasn't like City had injuries in midfield. It wasn't a bad midfield that they put out there, was it? With Rodri and Kevin De Bruyne is not bad at foot either, and Gundogan's all right as well. But it was almost as if Liverpool had decided, right, They might win this game, but I promise you they're not going to outwork us. They're not going to out-harry us or outdo us. And they never. And I like Rodri. I think he's a good player, but he was a bit like a deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
Because he's every time it was so intense, and those two set the tone early on.
I'll be honest, John. When I saw that Rodri was fit, it meant for me that Fernandinho was definitely starting centre back, and he was fine at centre half, but he's a much better. He's better than Rodri in DM, and that's not to say that. That'll always be the case, because it won't. But I always think about, I think like Fabinho, it took us 6 months to get him up to speed on how to play in our midfield. They've just thrown Rodri in straight away. And so they're adapting Rodri to a new league and to that team. They're adapting Fernandinho to a new position. They're throwing in new fullbacks and all that. And, those things make a big difference. Mm. And I think, again, that one of the contributing factors to, I think, us dominating the midfield was those, it's fine margins. Yeah. And that midfield for us is pairing at the moment.
It is. And I think, Steve's mentioned it there, but I think Wijnaldum yesterday possibly had the most complete performance he's ever had. Because he always has that thing of being really great at recovery and shielding the ball. But then he lacks that kind of like creative edge.
And he had that, didn't he?
Yesterday he was absolutely sensational.
That move on the edge of the box, where it ultimately doesn't work out for him. I mean, that was unbelievable.
It's very, he burst.
The little 1-2 and stuff, yeah. And we haven't seen enough of that from Wijnaldum, to be honest, have we, recently? And he probably should have scored, to be honest. But like I say, it wasn't only the usual Genie Wijnaldum, high energy, do all your work.
Well, of course.
It was lots of quality as well.
Yeah. There's a really good Rory Smith piece in the Times this morning about, like, all the stuff around, obviously all this, like the fan culture and stuff, but like around basically like how relentlessly well coached our team is. And you can see, and you've hit the nail on the head there, where I think everybody said the same. I tweeted it about 10 minutes in, like City were a fucking mess at the back yesterday.
Yeah.
And we were the complete opposite. Everyone knew where they needed to be. And even with the tweaks and stuff, like Henderson playing right side and almost playing right wing, and then later on in the game when he brings Gomez on and moves Trent further forward and stuff, everyone knew what the job was and what they had to do. And even just watching the front three later on as well, like their line in the press and stuff, we went in yesterday knowing exactly where everyone needed to play and where to press and what to do.
Yeah.
And the midfield carried the bulk of that work.
The interesting thing for me is I'd love to have known, if you could go back and change the game, how they would have played if they'd put, Rich Otamendi, I know he's not very good, but he is a natural centre-half, and put Fernandinho in Rodri's position, because the game was won and lost for me the last time we played at Anfield, because Fabinho was phenomenal in that DM position, and it just happened that the tides had turned. Obviously, Fabinho gets his first start against City, and he played like Fernandinho does, and there's that moment, obviously, where Fernandinho snaps him, and they get up, and Fernandinho looks at him, and Fabinho's, laughing, and it's like, you are him. Like, you are obviously your idol in the Brazilian squad. You're like 9 years older than him, and you're emulating everything that he does. And it's sort of like Fernandinho looked at him and just went, yeah. Like, I can understand, you are doing, you're being that destroyer that I've been for this Man City team for the last 8 years.
Yeah, and that's an important thing to know. So, well, let's get on to the goal then.
Where are we starting?
Where do you start? I mean, you have to start with the handball incident, which it's important to add, I think, Steve, because the PGMOL or whatever came out afterwards and said, you have to, because I think this, and this is what I got this from Max today, to be fair, and they said like they're taking the silver thing out because it doesn't lead to a goal, so it wouldn't necessarily be classed in the same as a handball to Bernardo Silva, so therefore it would have to be a handball incident involving only Trent, and in that instance his arm's out, it hits his arm, it's handball. Mark Clattenburg has come out and said the opposite. He said no, because it's classed as a goal scoring opportunity. I mean, it's a mess. Trent admitted it hit his arm. Everyone can see it hit his arm. I genuinely thought it was going to get pulled back.
Yeah.
It doesn't, and it reminds me a bit like the Trent Origi corner against Barcelona.
Place the whistle.
Yeah. City have switched off. I understand. You can feel it. You feel aggrieved after the fact, but don't stop playing.
Yeah. I think Sambo, I think it should have been a penalty. Or, depending on what the rule is, my interpretation was that I thought, had they give a pen, VAR would have checked it and give us a free kick for the Bernardo on ball. That's what I thought would have happened.
Yeah.
Similar to Laporte's goal against, what was it, Tottenham, when it hit his arm and someone puts it in.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be similar to that, but obviously, again, there's different, the PM, whatever, is saying one thing and ex-refs are saying another, so I don't know. I think it's handball by Trent. I do think he moves his arm to the ball. I think he knows, it's almost an instinct that he kind of does it, but got away with it. That's one of them. The ref is 3 yards away and he's decided that Trent Arnold's arm and the distance of the ball, he knows it's his arm, he's not soft, he's right in front of it, and he's decided that's not deliberate on ball, because you can see the way he does this, and as soon as he does that, you just play on, because if it is a penalty, you know, if you're City, VAR will give you that penalty if it's a pen, if not, just carry on doing your job.
Yeah.
Sergio Aguero stops playing footy. He could have scored, he could have just passed it to Sterling and they're probably still going to score. But he, for whatever reason, at Anfield again, he's another one who just loses his head at Anfield. We go up the other end, counter attack, and then even Gundogan's clearance is just a bit crap.
Yeah.
And it just falls to Fabinho, and I'll be honest, he's been doing this for a while, these shots, and doing my head, because I don't think he's very good at it. but obviously, I'm wrong because he is very good at it, because he just did that. It's a sickener for them, and you can see why they're annoyed at it. But I mean, I took my son to footy the other morning, and yesterday morning rather, before the match, and play to the whistle is the first thing they're taught.
Yeah.
You play on until the ref tells you not to play on anymore. Yeah. You don't just stop playing footy. You're not in charge of the game. Yeah. Say Joe Guerrero, you're not the ref. Michael Oliver's the ref. He'll tell you it's a penalty. I thought it was very, I'd be fuming if that was my team. I'd be fuming at the ref because I'd want a pen. But then I'd also be going, how on earth have you lost your heads in that moment? Just carry on. And then there's a fella watching a telly and he'll tell you if it's a pen.
It's one of them situations, isn't it, John? We had one at Old Trafford. You know, the Origi gets fouled, they go down the other end and they score, and it's a gut punch, but I can't. So I have empathy. Mm-hmm. I have empathy for Man City in this regard. But exactly, to a point. I mean, it's superseded massively by my absolute mesmerisation by the hit that Fabinho delivers there. I'm right behind that, even albeit at the other end of the goal, it was in the second. It really was.
It was the most in goal ever.
And it reminded me, it's got like the Oxlade-Chamberlain goal in the Champions League, that kind of thing, where City start really strong. We're just trying to get a foothold in the game, and then basically on a counter-attack.
Three passes.
Well, exactly. We've done them, and great all that work you've done, Man City, but you're a goal behind.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, you know, everyone throws the Klopp quote out about, like, you know, a counter-press being the best number 10 in the world. That's exactly what our type of football is, and that's what, you know, it's a blunt instrument, but it's a fucking brutal.
I think we actually played deliberate, like, we deliberately gave the ball away, which sounds soft. There were instances in that match where we just went a bit, we went long, and we just pumped it at them, trying to engineer a situation to counter press rather than being fully possession based.
And we can do that, and, like, you know, we're never going to play football the same way they play football because that's ultimately how they're built. But, you know, we're still a really good football inside. But I think we get lost as well sometimes in the kind of thing they're saying, you know, oh, Fabinho is a brilliant DM. He's really good at recoveries. He's really good at this. He's just a fucking brilliant footballer. You know what I mean? And, like, Neves does it for Wolves continually, that goal. You know what I mean? You know, Wilson's doing it for Bournemouth and he's doing it for Derby last season. Some people are just good at that type of thing and that seems to be his thing, that kind of doing that shot from distance. But, you know, that's... You know, in Pep's mind, if you're in Guardiola's head, how do you mark that? You can't, can you? You know,
I'd be furious.
There's no way to coach around a goal like that.
I think I'd be furious if that was my team.
Yeah.
He's got the freedom of Anfield. Like, there's no one within 10 yards of him.
Yeah.
On the edge of the box.
But he passes it out, and I don't know which man it is, but he sort of steps out of the way to show Fabinho the inside of the post. And
there's
just
a,
like,
channel, isn't there, directly in front of him. It's just like, if you can hit this straight, it's the path to goal is right there in front of you.
It's really bizarre. I thought, again, the Gundogan clearance isn't brilliant. It's kind of along the floor right there. But again, it was the reason I said I'd play Chamberlain, because we've seen Liverpool players constantly at Anfield getting that space against them.
Yeah.
Whether it's on counter-attacks or whether it's just pre-build-up play, there's a massive gaping hole there. And it wasn't, I'd be like, well, where's my team? Where's everyone?
Where's Rodri, like, the man who's supposed
how
to
is
be there?
How is this fella just got that much? He could have took a touch. He could have done anything he wanted. Mm. He'd done the best thing.
Yeah.
He's not going to be wrong. His choice was a very good choice, what he did.
He was just absolutely but, tremendous.
I mean, all game, you know, you talk about, like, passing of the torch and stuff. And if he isn't the best DM in the league now, I don't know who he is. You know, Kante maybe, but he doesn't really play there anymore. Yeah. He was unbelievable. I've always thought Fernandinho was that, and he has been for a few years.
My critique, rather than criticism of Fabinho, has been that, look, he's such a big fella. It's hard to move yourself about, you know what I mean? Like, you know, he's just not as nippy or nimble or whatever as, like, you know, you can't age and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Or even Henderson playing in that position to some extent. He went up a level for me in that game, and because I've seen plenty of games this season. I was referenced the Sheffield United game away, where we didn't really need him in that match. You needed someone who was gonna just do what Genie did, take a touch, go past the man, just change the game by being a bit more of a braver in possession. And there was two or three times at least in that match where it came to him, and he's kind of got his back to their goal. And the obvious thing is to play it back to the centre half, and instead, he just shifted it and turned 180 degrees, or he'd shift and he'd knock it past the man and move forward into space. It was genuinely exceptional. I want to talk.
He was sensational.
Yeah, I want to move it on to the.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
To the second goal, Bailey, and it's a thing of absolute beauty. Trent Alexander-Arnold on the right-hand side, with a left-footed pass across field to Andy Robertson.
Yeah.
And look, it's borderline on offside, but I'm not asked. And, you know, the ball to Mohamed Salah, the header, it was everything about it. It was like watching something that had been pre-programmed.
Mm.
Like, you know, you press a button on a computer game and it's the animation that follows. What, you know, the perfect of what happens when you press those things. Andy Robertson's ball. It was a perfect Liverpool goal.
It was very FIFA-esque in the sense it's just a lob through ball and like a first time cross, the perfect whip on it. But it's just a different style of all the goals we scored. Like, you're right, in the terms of the way we set up with the counter press, and it was like, I really didn't expect that to come from Liverpool. And just the confidence that it oozed to just, I understand why people say, and all the commentators are pushing for, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold to go into the midfield, because his vision is second to none in that team.
Yeah.
And especially with his weaker foot. And it's like, to have that asset in your team anywhere on the pitch is huge. But the goal is so well taken, you know. It was a proper game of fullbacks, and I think me and you, John, were talking about it. How do you solve that problem where you've constantly got Trent and Robertson on either byline, the switch is constantly on? Is there an efficient way to stop that ever happening?
I think Arsenal defended our fullbacks better than Man City did, if I'm being perfect.
We scored that goal at the Etihad, had a really good goal when we got beat, didn't we? It was, yeah. The switch was on all the time. It was on all the time, and I agree. I'm not sure how you stop it. Like, you've got to go and press, I presume, before he can get the pass off. Other than that goal, I mean, as critical as you can be for the City defending at times, no team in the world is stopping that.
You need to find a way to strand our fullbacks somewhere around the middle of the park.
Yeah.
And again, that's what the teams that have nullified. Sheffield United did it away. Arsenal did it a bit at Anfield. You know, it takes a set piece to break them down in that one, where you just let basically say, go on, Trent, you can have it just inside our half with loads of space, but you can't go anywhere else with it. So you're limited to playing really deep crosses and hoping that we win aerial duels or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't think City quite got it right.
The switch was on all game, wasn't it? And it worked to a I thought, I mean, again, you could give City 100 different tries to stop that goal, and they never could.
Yeah, but
the only way to stop on that goal is if Stones is near and playing Salah on. Like that's all whoever's foot it was.
And it comes with our own sort of risk, in the sense that there was times where Angelino was constantly in on that left, and there was that time where obviously it gets played into Kevin De Bruyne and he slides it right across the goal and Aguero just misses it. So it's not like they weren't utilising the space we gave them. Mm-hmm. It's just for some reason it didn't fall for them, and it absolutely fell for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Trent Alexander-Arnold.
The header, by the way, before you finish, the header's amazing by Salah.
Yeah.
It makes it look so easy.
Yeah.
It's like a curled header.
The way Liverpool play, I've seen them do this in pre-season training. I always think about it, and it's a difference between when you really go to football and when you can just play football, is that the pass tells you what to do with it. You don't decide yourself what you're doing with it. You're so well trained, the type of pass and how it comes at you tells you where you move it.
Yeah,
and the way it comes at them, that is... there's nothing else you can do. You can either do, you know, you can try other things, but they're wrong. Yeah. They're all the wrong things.
The two crosses for the second and third, they're the goal, aren't they? Yeah. The two crosses are the goal, because it's a goal.
They've put the dinner on the plate and just said, just eat that. Just finish that.
Yeah. Salah's an odd one in that. You know, the more I watch him, the more he stands around me, Harry Kane, except he's playing as a winger. Right. In that, he might not do nothing all game, but then give him that sniff.
Yeah.
And he's going to score. Like, you know, I don't think he was all right, Sal. He was pretty good. You could tell he was hobbled a bit, but he's so clinical. I mean, like that one chance, it's a goal all day. You just knew as soon as you saw it was him. If he's onside, he's going to score.
Yeah.
There was just no doubt that was a goal. Listen again, their moment about VAR. I mean, there's a little line on the floor that tells you we were onside.
That is one you
can't argue with. That one, you can argue with the pens and argue. They are arguing.
People have tried. Have you seen people that have redrawn the lines?
Exactly.
So it's like, you know, like it was for the Firmino. It's like it starts here and it's like every time.
Amazing.
Yeah. He's onside, lads.
Yeah. Trent Alexander-Arnold, John. He had a couple of interesting runs on the ball. Stephen reminded me of young Stephen Gerrard. I tweeted this the other day. At some point, he's going to do one where he bursts in from the right-hand side and he slams it in the top bin. And I think we'll see a little spate of goals from Trent. If he adds like 5 goals a season to his game, I just don't think there's any doubt that he's the best right-back in the world.
No, there can't be. And, you know,
there might not be already, by the way. Okay. But that makes it beyond doubt, I think.
And he's getting the attention for all the right things. I mean, you're seeing it in the press a lot more in the last 6-9 weeks, whatever it is. The attention, not just on what he brings defensively, but all he adds in terms of going forward and the passing and stuff. But it's not so much that, for me, it's not so much a thing of his ability. It's more a thing of his confidence. Like, he's clearly got the confidence to do it. He got into those positions yesterday. It's just it coming off for him, really. But to have that in what was the biggest game of the season, and could potentially be the biggest game of the season, depending on what happens in May. It speaks volumes about the lad, I think. You know, he's done it on the biggest stages against like Ronaldo and stuff in the Champions League, but then it's a different type of thing to try and take that responsibility, I think, onto yourself in a game like that, and to not just
think about City away in the Champions League quarter final
and they like triple upon him basically because they think he's the weak link and they're pushing Silva over there and Sané over there and the, you know, whatever. And his job there was like, he felt like he was hanging on for dear life. You know, he's just firefighting in that game. Whereas these days, he still has the ability to do that. But once he's emerged from whatever the little skirmish he's involved in, he lifts his head up and he goes back to doing the stuff that he does really well on the front foot.
We used to talk on the show about 12, 18 months ago about the thing of one goes and one stays with the fullbacks. So we saw in this game, Robbo goes forward and whoever was playing, you know, well, it used to be Milner, didn't it? Left back, Milner sits in a bit and the other lad will go or whatever, or Klein to play it right back. And we do the same. Yesterday and, you know, for the last however many months, it's the exact opposite. They both just go. And that's not just coaching and stuff. That's intelligence. That's an awareness of like knowing where to be and like you say and backing yourself to. Well, I'm involved in this here against this lad, but then once I get past them, I trust myself to, you know, like Matt up at centre half, you know, to go into midfield and do this, and I feel comfortable. You know, that comes from confidence in your teammates knowing that they'll cover fear behind you and stuff, but also yourself.
You know what I mean about the analysis of Trent? Sometimes is you get told that, you know, oh, Trent's been caught out of position. He hasn't. He's where he's meant to be.
That's his position.
He's been told to go there, and him being there, it'll benefit us 10 times, and then it might get him once.
Trent gets caught out of position when he's in a flat back four.
Yeah, he's worse.
And we're counter attacking, and he's not there to support the attack. Yeah.
Honestly,
the right
he's doing exactly what he's meant to be. Yeah. If he gets caught out up the pitch, like I say, it's almost like we're saying this, and we're going to put him there, and it's going to hurt you more than it hurts us. You might get in, and to be what I would say on Trent yesterday is that Raheem Sterling done him a few times, like absolutely sent him for the echo. But his head never went. He never lost it. Like,
there'll be people, I've not checked the comments back properly, but I guarantee there'll be people who thought that like Trent had a bad game because
Sterling's
of that.
So good.
Sterling is absolutely brilliant. That was the most dangerous wide performance I think I've seen since Eden Hazard come to Anfield. Yeah. Like every time he picked the ball up,
it was terrifying,
he was a constant threat. He goes wherever he wants to go with the ball. I'm so sad that we don't have him as an option in our squad. He still I think he still shits the bed a bit. We definitely got to him. But
the interesting thing is that we said about 10-15 minutes into the game, me and Tom, he's going to score it. Like this is going to be the game that he gets his downfield goal and gives it lifters and like doesn't. That's it. You know, that's the end of us having to boost early. But
I know what, keep booing him because it clearly affects him, doesn't it?
Of course, but that's what I was going to say is that. He's the most confident I've ever seen him at Anfield in this game. Like it normally, the jeers and the jitters, you can see the nerves in him. But he had a point to prove, I think that drew more out of Gomez, especially when he came on, and Trent. In that, you know, they're all England internationals and they know the history of Sterling leaving the club, and you know they want to bring him back down to his level and they want to succeed.
Gomez
over
picked him up.
Yeah, but that's the thing is that
just incredible.
Child.
Two moments that showed you that like there's no fear. Bailey was that it was Gomez coming on. We barely had a kick,
but just picking you up,
just literally picks him up and moves him out of his way. Yeah. And you've got Andy Robbo doing it, just something similar to Walker getting stuck in a tussle with him in the corner and then walking away with a massive grin.
Even Trent on Sterling giving the nudge into the crowd, like it's Sterling very shit.
Trent on the back, he got so angry. He did like a Austin Powers style judo shot on the back of his neck. He got very lucky not to get more penalised for that, but again, you're right, it all feeds into this notion of everyone knew the role, everyone, there was no like, oh, I'm going up against the almighty .. We were like, and it was mentioned that too, wasn't it, on Sky's coverage, and Jose Mourinho was talking to Vincent Kompany and like, yeah, look, you're the champions of England, but they're the champions of Europe. There's a confidence that comes with having that, and that's absolutely what we're seeing.
It wasn't just a big dick measuring contest. Like when they were coming out, it was the champions of Europe meet the champions of England. It's like, I know what I'd rather be. Obviously different now if you're a Liverpool fan, you've not won it for 30 years, but to a neutral, you know what you'd rather be. But it's the fact that obviously the media and are trying to hype it up as, you know, the new derby. You know, this is that game felt like a proper derby in the sense that there was the spats that we used to have with United, you know, that Gerrard has had with Van Persie in the past, and there's that real nastiness that's coming into these games now because we both want to just be the best. Yeah. And there's nobody wants to settle for less anymore.
The thing that stands to me in your race is that you said the Trump card of it all. We'd all probably swap a European Cup for just to break the Premier League, duh, I think. But again, I always think about it in terms of the players and all that. You can go and win a league title in a bunch of different places, can't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you can go and win a player, a top level world superstar might travel around and he might win the Bundesliga and the Premier League and La Liga and Serie A. But you know, if you win a European Cup, It's going to be. That's the one. That's you'll show. You'll be proud of everything you've won, but that'll be the one. That'll be the one that takes absolute pride of place in your in your cabinet and all that. And again, I think we played with a team that believed that that they believed that there was something more to us than you know as a result of what we've achieved. I thought it was brilliant. Their goal absolutely kills the game. Jordan Henderson, John, he. Again, we talk about how good the midfield was. We focused a bit on Gini, but Jordan Henderson deserves it. 60 minutes, played absolutely everywhere, gave everything for the team, won the ball back, drove the team forward, stands them up on the right wing. And for a lad who we all thought he was sold down the river a bit by Kenny Dalglish playing in right mid, you know, he's got the ability to do that for the team. It comes back to it for me with Henderson. If you insert another more fashionable player into the things that he does, I think everyone's absolutely made up. Great run, great cross leads to a fantastic goal.
Yeah, you know, it's exactly the type of performance you want to see from a Liverpool centre mid and in a game of that size, but also from your captain. You know what I mean? Like chasing everything, you know, trying to win every battle you can win. But as you say, like you know, I just don't think he's not a fashionable player, is he? As you say, he's just there's nothing sexy about him. Like even hearing him with Carragher after the game describing the goal, he literally just said like Carragher's trying to get some kind of like deep analysis out of him, and he's just saying yeah basically like you know I get to the byline and then I always put it in back stick because I know Mane might be there, and then he shows him another goal that's the same, and he goes yeah you know basically I put it back stick and Mane will be there. Like there's nothing, you know, he's such an unassuming fella and he's just like an ordinary bloke, but like it's brilliant, you know, to do that in every game. I think is an art that you know people don't appreciate, you know what I mean? We're very quick to, as I think as football fans, to give the praise to the Gerrards and the Alonsos and whoever else for the passion and for the good looking stuff. But we forget the kind of edge of Gerrard's game was, you know, being industrious and box to box, and like that his idol was Roy Keane. You know what I mean? It's that kind of gnarl and athleticism that you know, and to an extent that's what City lack, I suppose. You know, we were saying before, me and thin skin, like that's what they lack. They don't have that.
I was watching them the other week. And when he plays slightly more advanced, he reminds me a bit of Jordan Henderson in that, like, you know, he's not so good that he's going to, you know, burst past two men and slam a ball on the top bin. He's a good midfielder, but you see the difference, and obviously home advantage and being a captain and all that kind of stuff. Like, and maybe you're understanding and having the bottle and your role in the team. But Henderson, you know, again, there'll be plenty of people who probably think Gundogan's a better player than Jordan Henderson, and I saw no evidence
of
that.
I think it was you or Chris said about 2 or 3 years ago about, like, you know, he'd fit really well in the Spurs team of 2 or 3 years ago, Jordan Henderson. He's almost becoming like the James Milner, I think, of when he was at City. Like everyone used to look at Milner at City and go, I'd love him in our team. You know, he's a utility man, but he's just everywhere and does all the right things. And I think like whether it's it's like an echo chamber of us, I don't know. But like I think like I don't know whether other fans from other teams look at him. When he plays for England, he seems to get deplored.
He won by a lot of people over, didn't he, a couple of years ago for England in the World Cup and
that. Moment of that goal kind of sums Jordan Henderson up a bit, and that he works hard, he puts his foot in, it looks a little bit ungainly, like it doesn't look so smooth, like he's not gliding past players, it is a little bit scruffy, but then there's
you imagine if it'd be like, it's like when you put your foot down in an old car, a bit like it's not like putting like this like supercar that goes
it isn't Kevin De Bruyne just skipping by someone and making it look it's a bit ungainly, but then at the end of it there's a piece of sheer quality that is literally you can't stop. I mean, the goalie might be able to save the header. Probably, I don't know, it's hard because he's diving past it.
And he's rubbish.
And he's got hologram hands, so that doesn't help him. but like it kind of summed Henderson up, I thought, in that. Yeah. It's will to win. Like, that's something that, again, and it's a bit cliche because people like, you know, tactics and stats and all this. And I argue with Chris about this sometimes because he goes off on them. And I'm just like, sometimes it's just like putting your foot in. Yeah. Like that 50-50, someone's winning that. And it's Jordan Henderson's winning it because he wants to win it more, or he's stronger, or whatever. So like, as good as it can be, sometimes it's just a case of can you win that little battle and does the ball bounce your way? And that's what it was.
I want to move things on a bit because I think, Bailey, when we
Henderson goes off, and he mentioned earlier, apparently he'd been ill in the week, so there was obviously, I think it's an intelligent move. And obviously he's going to go away in the international break, and he'll play a lot of football there, and there's a busy period coming up. Don't want him as available as possible. We changed to a sort of 4-2-3-1, 4-4-2.
It was very 4-4-2, what I thought.
Obviously very out of possession, certainly. I think there's very little difference between those formations when you ultimately come to it. If you just basically make Bobby Firmino drop a little bit deeper, and all of a sudden
Salah goes into the middle a bit.
Yeah, it was. It didn't work, and I think a lot of that is because Jordan Henderson was having such an impact on that team. My thought at the time was, we're just trying to be a threat in a different way,
yeah,
rather than shut up shop. We're just going to give them something new to think about. Yeah. And it didn't. I don't think it worked, and I actually think it gave them a little bit more impetus and gave them a greater foothold in the game.
I mean, fair play to Klopp for trying it. You know, it takes bollocks to try it against Manchester City, obviously. Yeah. But it was, because me and Ben obviously were sat together in Birkel, and we were like, "Is he playing a 4-2-3-1?" And then we were like, "No," because now Trent and Robertson have switched, and now Salah and Mane have swapped in. It was just a bit of like a roll of the dice, go and do what you want sort of thing. You've got your 3-0 up. Let's have some fun. But you're right. It did seem like we did lose a lot when Henderson went off, and I think that's something that's what I was going to say a minute ago, is that Henderson's very much a player that you don't realise what you've got till it's gone, and the things that he does for the team, the dirty work that he does for the team. Yes, you put in a flary player like Chamberlain on, but did we really need him for that?
Well, we bring Milner on, and Milner goes left hand side, and to me again, it's why I originally thought it was 4-2-3-1, because it's like, we've done this where you bring Origi in and you put Origi on the left wing, and you move one of Salah, Mane centre forward, or Salah centre forward, Mane to the right, and then Firmino into the kind of 10. And it just, I think if we had put Origi on, I think we actually probably would have caused them more problems. But I also get it. He wants Milner on the pitch Thursday because it's so important to have a guy. If you're taking the captain off, putting your vice captain on, I think psychologically, I think it's an important thing to do.
At first, when Milner comes on, it's Milner Henderson. I don't think it changed that much. Actually, I thought it was a bit more 4-2-3-1. But you know, Wijnaldum's kind of has to do a bit of a job over on the other side, isn't he, and stuff. I think Klopp, they score, and I mean,
he's raging, isn't he?
He's trying to get the sub on in the first place.
Exactly. It's kind of intimated in some of the coverage I've seen that he's angry about a foul or whatever.
He's trying to get the sub on.
He's not. He's trying to get the sub on. Because the guys there, the boards, they're about to put the board up, and City take the throw over the far hand side, and then it that period of play ends with the ball in the back of the net. And Clive, like I've seen angry Klopp,
he's furious.
He runs down the touchline, he's screaming at the lads, and he's screaming at the fourth official, he's screaming at Mike Oliver.
But he's not screaming at the sky. He's not giving it.
No,
I had two subs. They brought on two subs. He's almost like he's identified the problem. I've tried this, not working. He's taken for me, he's put Chamberlain on, and then we do go for, like, it is proper 4-4-2.
Yeah.
I actually thought he took the wrong player off. I think he should have took Salah off. Yeah. But I don't think Salah he could run anymore. I think he was struggling. But I think the goal comes from the place where he's trying to put Oxlade-Chamberlain. He is trying to go 4-4-2. He can see. I've tried this 4-2-3-1, whatever it is, and we look a bit of a mess. It's hard to come on. I feel sorry for Milner. That must be our game to come on to. You know, to get it, you know, up to the pace of the game.
He was fine.
He done all right. He looked. He was fine, but it wasn't.
But you probably could have done with combative midfield Milner maybe at that point. But it was one of them, wasn't it? Like, he writes, Ox is bright coming on, getting Gomez on, ultimately the right call, because their game plan, John, becomes
give it to Sterling. Yeah,
but let Sterling play 20 yards deeper. Let him get it and let him just run at our defence and hope that some stuff happens. And you know, it comes very close to working. Sterling makes a poor decision. He can maybe have a shot against Alisson. He tries to square it.
Yeah, it's not my Lovren kind of is on the floor and sticks his leg out.
Exactly.
I just forgot about that. That was actually really nice.
It was the ultimate compliment to Sterling that we just put two right backs on. Yeah. And we said, we don't think anyone else is going to score. I think you're the threat. It's clever. It's really good actually management from Klopp in that.
Yeah.
It's spotting a problem and going, you know what? I'm not, what's the word? I'm humble enough to go, you know what, you're having the better of this. This period of the game, and he said after the game, that was City's best spell.
Yeah.
For 75 minutes, we were good, and then they dominated the last 15. And he identifies and goes, okay, that's fine. I'm more than willing to say, I'll just stick another defender.
I'll take the 3-1.
I'm happy with the 9-point lead that we 3-1 win.
We could have fallen to hubris there, couldn't we, John? Well, we could have decided that we could have gone, make a more offensive substitution again. You could bring an Origi or whatever in, bring Kater in, whatever. He's just gone, no,
this is it, lads, well done. This is the most we're getting from this. You know, it's like, you know, you're ahead in poker. now's the time to cash out.
That's the, you know, it comes back to the managers again, doesn't it? But that's the difference, I think, between Klopp and Guardiola over the last 3 years in terms of this league. I think is that I think Klopp's learned more and more the more every season he's been here, like how to manage, you know, and it's something people used to give loads of plaudits to Mourinho for, like how to compartmentalise each part of the season and what I need from each game and stuff. Like I thought the same. I thought, well, what if he takes you know, Salah off and puts Mane right out, because we seem to be getting a lot of, because I thought Angelino had a good game for them, but I thought he left a lot of space in behind and the dead back line was terrible. So I thought, well, if you put him right side and Origi left, we'll probably get a bit of joy. And maybe 18 months ago, 2 years ago, we would have done that. But as you say, he you know, I mean, you know, it's easy to settle, isn't it, when you're 3-1 up against, you know, your biggest rivals. But like, Sterling had a great game, and I actually think the opposite. I think he probably came into it more because we took Salah off and we sort of kind of set it to drop into a 4-4-2 rather than the other way around. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's, as you say, it's not the worst thing in the world if you're bringing two right backs on to defend a 3-1 lead with 15 minutes to go.
I think, I think you were right when you said, like, they decided to try and get Sterling was no longer playing on the shoulder. He'd come very, very deep. So our solution to that was, we'll just move our right back forward and then put another right back on. It's actually quite simple if you think about it, but it's to identify it, and we spotted it relatively quickly. He got in once, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the subs, it's made. And to be fair to Gomez, when he was solid, wasn't he? Like Sterling didn't get a lot out of him after that point on. So
it was the first time they came up against each other, and where Sterling had given Trent a physical battle. There was no physical battle to be had. He comes against Gomez and he bounces off Gomez and he's like, sorry, what was this? What
and Sterling gave him a bit of a lip as well. And he's
like, just laughed at his face. It was great.
It was interesting to me. Just quickly, it was interesting to me that they, obviously they had Mahrez on the bench, never introduced him. Because obviously they did a like-for-like swap with Jesus and Aguero.
That was bizarre, by the way.
Yeah. Why they didn't just, you know, chuck two more forwards on and really put us to the stone for
Aguero. Aguero was really good up until the point where he had to kick it at the goal.
Because Trent Alexander-Arnold handballed.
No, he wasn't he? Aguero was really good up until, but he couldn't shoot. Yeah. And sometimes it's the opposite with him. He does nothing and then all he does is shoot really good goals. And it's weird because the exact same team and the exact, just play it.
Play
in a stadium 40 minutes down the road and he scores every single time. Like every time we go to that place, he scores. Yeah. You might as well start the game 1-0 Aguero. You might just do it. Mm. Every single game. And for some reason at Anfield, he just, whether his head goes, or I don't understand what it is, like shots that, he would just score. That one that he cuts across the goal.
Yes, two. Clear-cut chances.
He scores that every time.
Like, and the De Bruyne free kick that you literally, he doesn't even really give a go for it.
It's bizarre. Like, I think he's one of the best strikers I've ever seen. He's unreal. But there's something about Anfield that just, you know, we talk about Sterling, Anfield affects him. It obviously affects Sergio Aguero more because he turns from the best striker in the world to a lad who looks like he couldn't hit a cow's arse with a banjo. Yeah, it's so bizarre.
Maybe he's absolutely a top red like Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah. Right, look. 9 points ahead of City after 11 games. 8 points clear at the top of the league. Everyone's being very, very careful. I think Peter Crouch was very careful to be drawn on stuff on Match of the Day. I've been asked a couple of times, trying my best to be careful. Jose Mourinho, just having none of it. He's like, if it was me and it was 9 points, I'd say it's done. It's not done, Steve. It's not, but I think the point is all.
It's not, but it is.
Yeah, look if Liverpool continue in this vein of form, it's based logic. This, if we carry on like this, then it will be done. It's a great point. Our Chris and I's friend James Ward, we got a game with it. He kind of made this point, and he's like, "Why is everyone being shithouses over this stuff?" Because rather than being, well, it's 6 points or 9 points. What happens if we lose? What are we talking about? We extrapolate this out. We're gonna basically win the league by like fucking. We're gonna be 27 points clear or whatever. Yeah. You know, by the time we get to the end of the season, if we continue to play.
The last team in the, well, I done a piece of work actually for my work. The last 20 teams.
LiverpoolFC.com.
Yeah, great. Read Liverpool, go over and have a look if you want. The last 20 years of teams, we were top after 12 games. City had 8 point lead 2 years ago. That's the biggest it's been. We're joint with it. They got 100 points, won the league by like 19 points. That's the company we're in now. If you were looking at it in any other way, if it was City top by eight and we were fourth, it'd be game over. City have won the league. Yeah. It just would be. We're all very worried about jinx.
Yeah.
Liverpool are brilliant at breaking all these stupid, horrible records, like being top at Christmas or not. Yeah. We've done it also.
You know what the difference is?
It's superstition rather than logic. Yeah. Logic says Liverpool are going to win the league. That's what all the stats tell you that. We're just really, really terrified of it being...
Because it's been so long. The difference for me, and it's right, and the caveat is that there's no accounting for mad injury crises.
No.
You know, there's no accounting for you lose the spine of your team in a freak accident. You know what I mean? They're all on a giant toboggan at Christmas and it crashes into a tree or something. You know what I mean? Like,
I'd be furious, by the way. If they were in the same one. It would be like the president and the vice president can't both be on Air Force One.
Yeah.
Alison and Virgil van Dijk, you are not allowed in the same toboggan. Harvey Elliott, you're in that one. Who else is in with Mo? Who have we got? Adrian, you're in.
Yeah, no two players in the same position are allowed in the same thing. Yeah,
Virgil,
yeah.
You're driving that one. Shaq, you're getting there behind him.
Yeah, that's the point, isn't it? Is that for me, the difference is that every title challenge we've ever had has felt ragged.
Yeah.
It's felt like we're always on a knife edge. Honestly. And I know, look, I was at Villa Park and it took me a day to recover from being at Villa Park because of how late we left it and the fact that I was dreadfully, dreadfully hungover. But, you know, we've had those moments. Sheffield United, that was luck. Yeah. You know, I don't think we've been as lucky as people think we have. I think we've used the time available to us better than teams have previously. But that's the point, you're right. I've never felt... The best Liverpool have played in a spell of football this season was the first half against Salzburg.
Yeah.
And it stands out because we were fucking exceptional. That's the best football we've played all season. I don't think we've come close to that level for the vast majority of the games. I think we've had spells where we've been good, but I don't really think we've been consistently at our best yet. And that is the encouraging thing. I don't feel like we're flat out. I don't feel like it's foot to the floor, needle in the red. You know, like it's go for the line or it all bursts and falls apart.
It's when you break, obviously, the season down into thirds. And it's exactly what happened last season in that we had a tremendous middle third in the sense that we were so far ahead by Christmas. And then, obviously, City had the best sort of end third/end of the second third sort of thing. And it's going to be massive in terms of, you know, City have got to play United, they've got to play Chelsea in the next like four weeks. We've got to play 9 games in that sort of time. It's going to be that. That's for me where it's won or lost.
I think that's the key, is it, Paul? Is that it's because we know how good they are. Yeah. Like no one. That's the, we've literally just seen them just win 18 games on the run.
Yeah.
And they can do it again.
Yeah.
And that's the difference I think between years past.
The thing for me is that you got Crystal Palace after the international break away from home, and we've struggled there. Even though we've been taking the wins, we've struggled there a lot in recent years. If you just go, put a little full stop on that first third of the season with that game. You know, the international break doesn't help. To go 9 points ahead of City and then to drop points at your first available opportunity afterwards, I think puts you on rocky ground.
Don't bank on them beating Chelsea, though.
No. But you know, it's right, to be fair. But I think for us, again, not worrying about what Man City are doing, I think you've just got to come out and just... There's loads and loads of games coming up. You've got to win them all, really.
Can I ask a question to the guys? Like, if City are fourth and we think they're... Are Leicester and Chelsea title challenges in anyone's heads?
I can't allow myself to... I still think City are a higher quality.
I said to my pissing United mates, I said it would be poetic justice for Brendan Rodgers to beat us to the league with Leicester. And it's disgusting to think about because they are the absolute dark horse in the sense that they'll be 30 games in, still be second, and people will still think they won.
You won't know what their teams are capable of, Chelsea or Leicester, until they come out of December.
Yeah.
Chelsea have got the European football. They've got all the fixture overload. They might come out on top in that. It's if Brendan Rodgers guides them through that Christmas period and they're still there and thereabouts. Look, if they're in touching distance with us...
With no European games.
Come the Boxing Day game, even if we beat them, they're thereabouts. I think they'll be issuing... They're probably still issuing for top four, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I just think both of those sides will fall short somewhere, and it will probably just be that when it's physically most demanding.
Well, Chelsea haven't been great in like big games.
I'm scared more of Leicester than Chelsea.
Chelsea aren't great at home, which is quite odd. I think mm. you you might be able to fancy yourself going there, I suppose.
Okay, well, listen, Dad, we could do this all day long. We've got a whole international break to merrily chat about all this stuff, and that we will. But listen, thank you very much for watching. Thank you very much to theathletic.co.uk for sponsoring this podcast today. Go to theathletic.co.uk/theredmenTV to get 50% off your annual subscription. The best Liverpool writing in the world, including the likes of James Pearce. No ads, no pop-ups, all that good stuff. Make sure you like and subscribe to the Red Men TV YouTube channel as well, and we'll see you very, very soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.